This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Snowflower and the Secret Fan by Lisa C. Read for you by Jody Long. Author Forward.
In this story, I have followed the traditional Chinese style for rendering dates. The third year of Emperor Daoguan's reign, when Lily was born, is 1823. The Taiping Rebellion started in 1851 and ended in 1864. It is believed that Nushu, the secret code writing used by women in a remote area of southwestern Hunan province, developed 1,000 years ago. It appears to be the only written language in the world to have been created by women exclusively for their own use.
Snowflower and the Secret Fan. Sitting quietly. I am what they call in our village, one who has not yet died, a widow, 80 years old. Without my husband, the days are long. I no longer care for the special foods that Peony and the others prepare for me. I no longer look forward to the happy events that settle under our roof so easily. Only the past interests me now. After all this time, I can finally say the things I couldn't when I had to depend on my natal family to raise me, or rely on my husband's family to feed me. I have a whole life to tell. I have nothing left to lose, and few to offend. I am old enough to know only too well my good and bad qualities, which were often one and the same. For my entire life I longed for love. I knew it was not right for me, as a girl and later as a woman, to want or expect it. But I did, and this unjustified desire has been at the root of every problem I have experienced in my life. I dream that my mother would notice me, and that she and the rest of my family would grow to love me. I tried to fulfill their expectations for me, to attain the smallest bound feet in the county. So I let my bones be broken and molded into a better shape. In this way, my mother taught me how to endure. Not just the physical trials of foot-binding and childbearing, but the more torturous pain of the heart, mind, and soul. In our country, we call this type of mother love Teng Ai. My son has told me that in men's writing, it is composed of two characters. The first means pain, the second means love. That is a mother's love. The binding altered not only my feet, but my whole character. By the time I was 40, the rigidity of my foot binding had moved from my golden lilies to my heart, which held on to injustices and grievances so strongly that I could no longer forgive those I loved and who loved me. My only rebellion came in the form of Nushu, our women's secret writing. My first break with tradition came when Snowflower, my Lao Tong, my old same, my secret writing partner, sent me the fan that sits here on my table. And then again after I met her. But apart from who I was with Snowflower, I was resolved to be an honorable wife, a praiseworthy daughter-in-law, and a scrupulous mother. In bad times, my heart was as strong as jade. I had the hidden might to withstand tragedies and sorrows, but here I am, a widow, sitting quietly as tradition dictates, and I understand that I was blind for too many years. My life course has been a normal one. Daughter days, hairpinning days, rice and salt days, and now sitting quietly. So here I am alone with my thoughts and this fan before me. When I pick it up, it's strange how light it feels in my hands, for it records so much joy and so much grief. These last 40 years I have read it so many times that it is memorized like a childhood song. In its folds I see the misunderstandings, the broken trust, and the final shutting of the door. I am writing these pages for those who reside in the afterworld. Peony, my grandson's wife, has promised to make sure that they are burned at my death, so my story will reach them before my spirit does. Let my words explain my actions to my ancestors, to my husband, but most of all, to Snowflower, before I greet them again. Milk Ears. My name is Lily. I came into this world on the fifth day of the sixth month of the third year of Emperor Dao Guang's reign. Pu Wei, my home village, is in Yongming County, the county of everlasting brightness. Most people who live here are descended from the Yao ethnic tribe. Although the people of our region have never been rich, we have rarely been so poor that women had to work in the fields. We were members of the Yi family line. My father and uncle leased 7 mu of land from a rich landowner. They cultivated that land with rice, cotton, taro, and kitchen crops. My family home was typical in the sense that it had 2 stories and faced south. A room upstairs was designated for women's gathering and for unmarried girls to sleep. Rooms for each family unit and a special room for our animals flanked the downstairs main room, where baskets filled with eggs or oranges and strings of drying chilies hung from the central beam to keep them safe from mice, chickens, or a roaming pig. We had a table and stools against one wall. A hearth where Mama and Aunt did the cooking occupied a corner on the opposite wall. The floor was hard-packed earth. I've never thought much about whether I was happy. I was a so-so girl who lived with a so-so family in a so-so village. But I remember the day I began to notice and think about what was around me. I had just turned 5, and I woke up before dawn. I lay between elder sister and third sister. I glanced across the room to my cousin's bed. Beautiful Moon, who was my age, hadn't woken up yet, so I stayed still, waiting for my sisters to stir. I faced elder sister, who was 4 years older than I. Although we slept in the same bed, I didn't get to know her well until I had my feet bound and joined the women's chamber myself. The 4 of us looked very similar. We each had black hair that was cut short. We were very thin, and we were close in height. Otherwise, our distinguishing features were few. Elder sister had a mole above her lip. Third sister's hair was always tied up in little tufts because she did not like Mama to comb it. Beautiful Moon had a pretty round face, while my legs were sturdy from running and my arms strong from carrying my baby brother. "Girls!" Mama called up the stairs to us. That was enough to wake up the others and get us all out of bed. Elder sister hurriedly got dressed and went downstairs. Beautiful Moon and I were slower because we had to dress third sister as well. Then we went downstairs, where Aunt swept the floor. Uncle sang a morning song. Mama, with second brother swaddled on her back, poured water into the teapot to heat. And elder sister chopped scallions for the rice porridge we call congee. "Beautiful Moon, Lily, come here, come here." My aunt greeted us this way each and every morning. We ran to her. Aunt kissed Beautiful Moon and patted my bottom affectionately. Then Uncle swept up Beautiful Moon in his arms and kissed her. After he set her back down, he winked at me and pinched my cheek. You know the old saying about beautiful people marrying beautiful people and talented people marrying talented people? That morning I concluded that Uncle and Aunt were 2 ugly people and therefore perfectly matched. Uncle, my father's younger brother, had bow legs, a bald head, and a full shiny face. Aunt was plump, and her teeth were like jagged stones protruding from a karst cave. Her bound feet were not very small, maybe 14 centimeters long, twice the size of what mine eventually became. I'd heard wicked tongues in our village say that this was the reason Aunt could not carry a son to term. To me, they had an ideal marriage. He was an affectionate rat, and she was a dutiful ox. Every day they provided happiness around the hearth. My mother had yet to acknowledge that I was in the room. This is how it had been for as long as I could remember. Melancholy sank into me, whisking away the joy I had just felt with aunt and uncle. Even now, after all these years, it is difficult for me to think about Mama and what I realized on that day. I saw so clearly that I was inconsequential to her. I was a third child, a second worthless girl. She looked at me the way all mothers look at their daughters, as a temporary visitor who was another mouth to feed until I went to my husband's home. I was 5, old enough to know I didn't deserve her attention, but suddenly I craved it. I longed for her to look at me and talk to me the way she did with elder brother. Grandmother tottered into the room, her back bent so far forward that she and I saw eye to eye. "Help your grandmother," Mama ordered. But grandmother waved me away impatiently. I moved so quickly that I bumped into my father, the 11th and most important person in our household. He didn't reprimand me or say anything to anyone else. As far as I knew, he wouldn't speak until this day was behind him. After we ate, my father and my uncle set out for the fields, and my mother, aunt, grandmother, and older sister went upstairs to the women's chamber. I wanted to go with Mama and the other women in our family, but I wasn't old enough. To make matters worse, I now had to share elder brother with my baby brother and third sister when we went back outside. I carried the baby on my back as we cut grass and forage for roots for our pig. Third sister followed us. She was 4 and a funny, ornery little thing. Once done with our chores, our little foursome explored the village, going up and down the alleys between the houses until we came across some other girls jumping rope. My brother stopped, took the baby, and let me jump too. Then we went home for lunch. Afterward, elder brother left with the men and the rest of us went upstairs. Even at that age, I enjoyed being in the women's chamber. Mama and grandmother wove cloth. Beautiful Moon and I made balls of yarn. Aunt sat with brush and ink, carefully writing her secret characters, while elder sister waited for her 4 sworn sisters to arrive for an afternoon visit. Soon enough we heard the sound of 4 pairs of lily feet come quietly up the stairs. Elder sister greeted each girl with a hug, and the 5 of them clustered together in a corner. I studied them, knowing that I would be part of my own sworn sisterhood in another 2 years. The sisterhood had been formed when the girls turned 7. To cement the relationship, their fathers had each contributed 25 gin of rice, which was stored at our house. Later, when each girl married out, her portion of rice would be sold so her sworn sisters could buy gifts for her. The last bit of rice would be sold on the occasion of the last sworn sister's marriage. That would mark the end of the sisterhood, since the girls would have all married out to distant villages where they would be too busy with their children and obeying their mothers-in-law to have time for old friendships. Mama ran out of yarn and stood up to get more. Mama's feet had been badly bound by her mother. Instead of golden lilies, Mama had ugly stumps. Instead of swaying when she walked, she balanced herself on a cane. "Isn't it time for Beautiful Moon and Lily to go outside?" Aunt asked my mother. "No," Mama said sternly. "I don't like the girls wandering around the village when they should be working at their house learning." But about this one thing, my aunt was stubborn. "They have only these few months." She left unsaid that soon our feet would be bound. "Let them run while they can." My mother was exhausted. She had the full responsibility of the household. She had a higher status than aunt, but she could not fight every day for what she believed was proper behavior. "All right," Mama sighed. "They can go." Aunt quickly shooed us to the door before my mother could change her mind, while elder sister and her sworn sister stared after us wistfully. My cousin and I ran downstairs and outside. We scurried down the alley until we found my brother taking the family water buffalo down to the river. He rode on the beast's broad shoulders. Beautiful Moon and I walked single file behind them through the narrow alleys. We left the village proper and rambled along a raised narrow path down to the Xiao River and stopped just before the swaying bridge that crossed it. In the far distance, we saw other villages, places I never thought I would go in my lifetime. Then we climbed down to the riverbank. I took off my shoes and waded into the shallows. 75 years have gone by, and I still remember the feel of the mud between my toes, the rush of water over my feet, the cold against my skin. Beautiful Moon and I were free in a way that we would never be again. The preparation for my foot binding took much longer than anyone expected. In cities, girls who come from the gentry class have their feet bound as early as age 3. The poorest girls don't have their feet bound at all. We know how they end up. They are either sold as servants or they become little daughters-in-law, big-footed girls from unfortunate families who are given to other families to raise until they are old enough to bear children. But in our so-so county, girls from families like mine begin their foot binding at age 6, and it is considered done 2 years later. When Beautiful Moon and I turned 6, Mama and Aunt sent for the diviner to find an auspicious date to begin our binding. They say fall is the most propitious time to start foot binding, but only because winter is coming and cold weather helps numb the feet. Was I excited? No, I was scared. I was too young to remember elder sisters binding, but who in our village had not heard the screams of the Woo girl down the way? My mother greeted Diviner Hu downstairs, poured tea, and offered him a bowl of watermelon seeds. Her courtesy was meant to bring good readings. He began with me. He considered my birth date. Then he said, "I need to see this child with my own eyes." This was not the usual case, and when my mother fetched me, her face was etched with worry. She led me to the diviner. "Eyes, yes. Ears, yes. That mouth." He looked up at my mother. "This is no ordinary child." My mother sucked in her breath. This was the worst announcement the diviner could have made. "Further consultation is required," the diviner said. "I propose we confer with a matchmaker. Do you agree?" Such was my mother's fear or conviction that she didn't even ask my father's permission to spend the money. "Please return as soon as you can. We will be waiting." The next day, sweet cakes were made, chrysanthemum tea brewed, and special dishes brought out of cupboards. My father stayed home from the field so he could greet the visitors. All these extravagances showed the seriousness of the situation. Then, to make matters worse, the diviner brought with him not Madame Gao, the local matchmaker, but Madame Wang, the matchmaker from Tongku, the best village in the county. Something was terribly wrong. Once they were inside, the tea and treats were served. Just as on the day before, I was called to the room. I glanced around at the elders in my family. The images of their faces on that day are very clear to me. But what I remember most is my mother's face. I saw her true person for the first time that day. I had always known she had been born in the year of the monkey, but I never realized that its traits of deceit and cunning ran so strongly in her. Something like male ambition glowed right through her skin. I was told to stand in front of Madame Wang. I thought her woven silk jacket was beautiful, but a child has no discrimination. Today I would say it was gaudy and unbefitting a widow. But then a matchmaker is not like a regular woman. She does business with men, establishing bride prices, haggling over dowries, and serving as a go-between. Madame Wang clasped me between her knees and stared hard into my face. She pinched my earlobes, then she put her hands on my hips. "I was only 6. You can't tell anything about fertility yet." Then she did the most amazing thing. She got out of her chair and told me to take her place. Then she knelt before me and peeled off my shoes and socks. She turned my feet this way and that, and then ran her thumbnail up and down my arch. Madame Wang looked over at the diviner and nodded. He cleared his throat. "Your daughter presents us with a special circumstance. Her full earlobes tell us she is generous in spirit, but most important are her feet. Her arch is very high, but not yet fully developed. This means, mother, that you should wait 1 more year to begin foot binding. 7 is not the custom in our village, I know, but your daughter is underdeveloped for her age,
even for your village, which has endured difficult years. But your daughter has something besides smallness from famine. Her foot has a particularly high arch, which means that if the proper allowances are made now, her feet could be the most perfect produced in our county."
The room was eerily quiet. Something continued to be terribly amiss. Into the silence, Madam Wong spoke.
"The girl is indeed very lovely, but golden lilies are far more important in life than a pretty face. A lovely face is a gift from heaven, but tiny feet can improve social standing. On this we can all agree. What happens beyond that is really for father to decide."
She looked directly at Baba, but the words were meant for my mother.
"It is not such a bad thing to make a good alliance for a daughter. A high family will bring you a better bride price and long-term political and economic protection. If mother does her job properly, this insignificant girl could marry into a family in Tongku."
"Tongku?"
"You speak of wonderful things," my father ventured warily. "But our family is modest. We cannot afford your fee."
"Old father, if your daughter's feet end up as I imagine, I can rely on a generous fee being paid by the groom's family. You will also be receiving goods from them in the form of a bride price. As you can see, you and I will both benefit from this arrangement. Beyond all of this, I believe your daughter might also be eligible for a Lao Tang relationship."
I knew the words and what they meant. A Lao Tang relationship was completely different from a sworn sisterhood. It involved two girls from different villages and lasted their entire lives, while a sworn sisterhood was made up of several girls and dissolved at marriage. Never in my short life had I met a Lao Tang. To have a Lao Tang was very special indeed. I should have been excited, but like everyone else in the room, I was aghast. This was not a subject that should be discussed in front of men. So extraordinary was the situation that my father lost himself and blurted out,
"None of the women in our family has ever had a Lao Tang."
"Your family has not had a lot of things. Until now," Madam Wong said. "Discuss these matters within your household. But remember, opportunity doesn't step over your threshold every day. I will visit again."
The matchmaker and the diviner left. My mother and I went upstairs. As soon as we entered the women's room, she slapped me across the face as hard as she could. "Do you know how much trouble this will bring your father?" Harsh words, but I knew that slap was for good luck and to scare away bad spirits. After all, nothing guaranteed that my feet would turn out like golden lilies. It was equally possible that my mother would make a mistake with my feet, as her mother had made with hers. Although my face stung, inside I was happy. That slap was the first time Mama had shown me her mother love, and I had to bite my lips to keep from smiling. Mama went back downstairs and talked with my aunt, uncle, father, and grandmother. The matchmaker's announcement meant that my father would have to work very hard to build a dowry appropriate for a higher marriage. I don't know if they agreed on my fate on that day, but in my mind nothing was ever the same. Beautiful Moon's future also changed with mine. I was a few months older, but it was decided that the two of us should have our feet bound at the same time as third sisters. Although I still continued to do my outdoor chores, I never again went to the river with my brother. In one instant, I had changed from being a worthless girl into someone who might be useful to the family. During the next year, my education in the upstairs women's chamber began in earnest, but I already knew a lot. I knew that men rarely entered the women's chamber. It was for us alone where we could do our work and share our thoughts. I would spend almost my entire life in a room like that. I also knew the difference between Nei, the inner realm of the home, and Wai, the outer realm of men. Whether you are rich or poor, emperor or slave, the domestic sphere is for women and the outside sphere is for men. I also understood that two Confucian ideas ruled our lives. The first was the three obediences. When a girl, obey your father. When a wife, obey your husband. When a widow, obey your son. The second was the four virtues, which delineate women's behavior, speech, carriage, and occupation. Be chaste and yielding, calm and upright in attitude. Be quiet and agreeable in words. Be restrained and exquisite in movement. Be perfect in handiwork and embroidery. If girls do not stray from these principles, they will grow into virtuous women. My studies now branched out to include the practical arts. I learned how to thread a needle, choose the thread color, and make my stitches small and even. This was important as Beautiful Moon, Third Sister, and I began working on the shoes that would carry us through the 2-year foot-binding process. We needed shoes for day, special slippers for sleep, and several pairs of tight socks. We worked chronologically, starting with things that would fit our feet now and moving to smaller and smaller sizes. Most important, my aunt began to teach me new shoe, the secret writing, so that Beautiful Moon and I could share it forever. Unlike men's writing, a new shoe character does not represent a specific word. Rather, our characters are phonetic in nature. As a result, one character can represent every spoken word with that same sound. So much care has to be taken to make sure we do not misinterpret meaning. Many women, like my mother and grandmother, never learned the writing, but they still know some of the songs and stories, many of which resonate with a ta-dum-ta-dum-ta-dum rhythm. Aunt instructed me on the special rules that govern new shoe, but the two most important rules are these. Men must never know that it exists, and men must not touch it in any form. Things continued this way, with Beautiful Moon and me learning new skills every day until my 7th birthday when the diviner returned. This time he had to find a single date for 3 girls, Beautiful Moon, myself, and Third Sister, to begin our binding. He hemmed and hawed. He consulted our 8 characters. But when all was said and done, he settled on the typical day for girls in our region, the 24th day of the 8th lunar month, when those who are to have their feet bound say prayers and make final offerings to the tiny-footed maiden, the goddess who oversees foot-binding. Mama and Aunt fed us red bean dumplings to help soften our bones to the consistency of a dumpling and inspire us to achieve a size for our feet that would be no larger than a dumpling. Many women in our village came to visit. Elder sisters, sworn sisters, wished us luck, brought us sweets, and congratulated us on our official entry into womanhood. Sounds of celebration filled our room. Everyone was happy, singing, laughing, talking. Now I know there were many things no one said. No one said I could die. It wasn't until I moved to my husband's home that my mother-in-law told me that 1 out of 10 girls died from foot binding. All I knew was that foot binding would make me more marriageable and therefore bring me closer to the greatest love and greatest joy in a woman's life, a son. To that end, my goal was to achieve a pair of perfectly bound feet with 7 distinct attributes. They should be small, narrow, straight, pointed, and arched, yet still fragrant and soft in texture. Of these requirements, length is most important. 7 centimeters, about the length of a thumb, is the ideal. Shape comes next. A perfect foot should be shaped like the bud of a lotus. It should be full and round at the heel, come to a point at the front, with all weight borne by the big toe alone. This means that the toes and arch of the foot must be broken and bent under to meet the heel. Finally, the cleft formed by the forefoot and heel should be deep enough to hide a large cash piece perpendicularly within its folds. If I could attain all that, happiness would be my reward. On the morning of the 24th day of the 8th lunar month, we offered the tiny-footed maiden glutinous rice balls, while our mothers placed the miniature shoes they had made before a small statue of Guan Yin as a good luck offering. After this, Mama and Aunt gathered together alum, astringent, scissors, special nail clippers, needles, and thread.
They pulled out the long bandages they had made. Elder Sister arrived with a bucket of boiled water in which mulberry root, ground almonds, urine, herbs, and roots steeped. As the eldest, I went first, and I was determined to show how brave I could be. Mama washed my feet and rubbed them with alum to contract the tissue and limit the inevitable secretions of blood and pus. She cut my toenails as short as possible. During this time, my bandages were soaked so that when they dried on my skin, they would tighten even more. Next, Mama took one end of a bandage, placed it on my instep, then pulled it over my four smallest toes to begin the process of rolling them underneath my foot. From here, she wrapped the bandage back around my heel. Another loop around the ankle helped to secure and stabilize the first two loops. The idea was to get my toes and heel to meet, creating the cleft, but leaving my big toe to walk on. Mama repeated these steps until the entire bandage was used. Aunt and grandmother looked over her shoulder, making sure no wrinkles saw their way into those loops. Finally, Mama sewed the end tightly shut so the bindings would not loosen and I would not be able to work my foot free. She repeated the process on my other foot. Then Aunt started on Beautiful Moon. During the binding, Third Sister said she wanted a drink of water and went downstairs. Once Beautiful Moon's feet were done, Mama called for my sister, but she didn't answer. Mama and Aunt searched the house, and then from outside we heard their voices carry up to us as they called, "Third Sister! Third Sister!" Grandmother and Elder Sister moved to the lattice window and looked out. "Mama's dragging Third Sister down the alley," Elder Sister reported. Now we heard Third Sister yell, "No, I won't go! I won't do it!" Third Sister was pushed into the room. "This will happen. You have no choice," Mama declared. Third Sister fought as hard as she could. Elder Sister, Aunt, and Grandmother held her down while Mama hurriedly applied the bandages. The whole while, Third Sister screamed. For 1 second, Mama loosened her grip on Third Sister's foot, and soon that entire leg flailed, the long bandage twirling through the air like an acrobat's ribbon. Beautiful Moon and I were horrified. This was not the way someone in our family should act. But all we could do was sit and stare, because by now growing daggers of pain were shooting from our feet up our legs. Now I will write about the next few minutes and weeks, the length of which in a lifetime as long as mine should be insignificant, but to me were an eternity. Mama looked at me first because I was the eldest. "Get up!" The idea was beyond my comprehension. My feet were throbbing. Aunt tapped Beautiful Moon's shoulder. "Stand up and walk." Third Sister still wailed on the floor. Mama yanked me out of the chair. The word pain does not begin to describe the feeling. "Walk!" As I shuffled toward the window, Mama reached down and pulled Third Sister to her feet, dragged her to Elder Sister, and said, "Take her back and forth across the room 10 times. Hearing this, I understood what was in store for me. Tears coursed down my face as Mama led me back and forth across the women's chamber. I heard myself whimpering. Third Sister kept hollering and trying to wrestle away from Elder Sister. Grandmother, whose duty as the most important woman in our household was merely to oversee these activities, took Third Sister's other arm. Only Beautiful Moon buried her feelings. After our 10 round trips, Mama, Aunt, and Grandmother left us alone. What a reprieve it was to lie down. Even to have our feet on the same level as the rest of our bodies was a relief. But as the hours passed, a new kind of suffering overtook us. Our feet burned as though they lay among the coals of the brazier. Strange, mewling sounds escaped from our mouths. Poor Elder Sister had to share the room with us. She tried her best to comfort us. None of us slept that night, but whatever we thought we felt on the first day was twice as bad on the second. All three of us tried to rip our bindings, but only Third Sister actually freed a foot. Mama beat her, rewrapped the foot, and made her walk an extra 10 rounds across the room as punishment. Over and over, Mama shook her roughly and demanded, "Do you want to become a little daughter-in-law? It's not too late. That future can be yours."
On the fourth day, we soaked our bandaged feet in a bucket of hot water. The bindings were then removed, and Mama and Aunt checked our toenails, scrubbed away dead skin, dabbed on more alum and perfume to disguise the odor of our putrefying flesh, and wrapped new, clean bindings even tighter this time. Every day the same. Every fourth day the same. Every 2 weeks a new pair of shoes, each pair smaller. The women's chamber turned into a room of discipline. Instead of doing our usual chores, we walked back and forth across the room. Every day, Mama and Aunt added more rounds. Every day, Grandmother was enlisted to help. One day, as I made one of my trips across the room, I heard something crack. One of my toes had broken. The sound was so sharp that everyone in the women's chamber heard it. My mother's eyes zeroed in on me. Move! Progress is finally being made. Walking, my whole body trembled. By nightfall, the 8 toes that needed to break had broken, but I was still made to walk. I felt my broken toes under the weight of every step I took, for they were loose in my shoes. The freshly created space, where once there had been a joint, was now a gelatinous infinity of torture. The freezing weather did not begin to numb the excruciating sensations that raged through my entire body. On the day that my bindings were rewrapped, I soaked my feet as usual, but this time the massage to reshape the bones was beyond anything I had experienced so far. With her fingers, Mama pulled my loose bones back and up against the soles of my feet. At no other time did I see Mama's mother love so clearly. A true lady lets no ugliness into her life, she repeated again and again, drilling the words into me. Only through pain will you have beauty. Only through suffering will you find peace. I wrap, I bind, but you will have the reward.
Beautiful Moon's toes broke a few days later, but Third Sister's bones refused. On the days when our bindings were removed, we could see differences between our feet and Third Sister's. Yes, blood and pus seeped through our bandages, as was normal, but with Third Sister, the fluids that oozed from her body had taken on a new and strange smell. Madame Wong came for another visit. She inspected the work my mother had done and made a few recommendations of herbs that could be made into a tea to help the pain. I did not try that bitter brew until the days of snow set in, and the bones in my midfoot cracked apart. My mind was in a haze brought on by the combination of suffering and the herbs when Third Sister's condition suddenly changed. Her skin burned. Her round face waned into sharp angles. Mama unwrapped Third Sister's bindings. A disgusting odor infused the room. Aunt gagged. The pus was dark green. Third Sister's feet set into a steaming bowl of water. She was so far away in her mind that she didn't cry out. All of Third Sister's screams of the past weeks took on a new meaning. Did she know on that first day that something bad might happen? Mama scrubbed at those feet, trying to remove the infection. Third Sister fainted. Finally, Mama pulled the broken appendages from the bucket and patted them dry. Mother, Mama called to her mother-in-law. You have more experience than I. Please help me. But Grandmother didn't stir under her quilts. Alum was spread over Third Sister's skin, and her feet were rebound. The next day, snow fell, and she was worse. Though we were not rich, Baba went out into the storm and brought back the village doctor, who looked at Third Sister and shook his head. It was the first time I saw that gesture, which means that we are powerless to stop the soul of a loved one from leaving for the spirit world. But the bad news of that day was not yet done. While we kowtowed to the doctor, he looked round the room and saw Grandmother under her quilts. He moved to her, touched her forehead. He looked up at my father. Your honored mother is very sick. Our whole family set to questioning. Had all that walking back and forth across the room with Third Sister stolen Grandmother's storehouse of steps? Had the ghost spirits who'd come to prey on Third Sister been tempted by the possibility of another victim? All focus now shifted to Grandmother.
My father and uncle left her side only to smoke, eat, or relieve themselves. Aunt assumed all the household duties. I never saw Mama sleep. As the first daughter-in-law, she had two main purposes in life: to provide sons to carry on the family, and to care for her husband's mother. Since everyone was occupied with grandmother, Beautiful Moon and I were assigned to watch over third sister. We were only seven and did not know the words or actions to comfort her. Her torment was great, but it was not the worst I would see in my lifetime. She died 4 days later. Grandmother died 1 day after that. I often think back on those first few months of our foot binding. Foot size would determine how marriageable I was. My small feet would be offered as proof to my prospective in-laws of my personal discipline and my ability to endure the pain of childbirth, as well as whatever misfortunes might lie ahead. My small feet would show the world my obedience to my natal family, particularly to my mother, which would also make a good impression on my future mother-in-law. And though I knew nothing of this at the time, my feet would be something that would hold my husband's fascination during the most private and intimate moments between a man and a woman. His desire to see them and hold them in his hands never diminished during our lives together, not even after the rest of my body was no longer an enticement to do bed business. 6 months passed since our foot binding, 2 months since grandmother and third sister died. Though we were still at the beginning of our 3-year mourning period for grandmother, life continued. The most agonizing part of my foot binding was behind me, and the best thing for Beautiful Moon and me to do now was sit and let our feet bond into their new shape. In the early morning hours, the two of us, under elder sister's supervision, practiced new stitches. In the late morning, Mama taught me how to spin cotton. In the early afternoon, we switched to weaving. Beautiful Moon and her mother did the same lessons, only in reverse. Late afternoons were devoted to the study of Nushu, with Aunt teaching us simple words with patience and great humor. Madam Gao, the local matchmaker, came regularly to negotiate contracting a kin, the first of the 5 stages that would make up the wedding process for both elder brother and elder sister. A girl from a family much like ours had been found in Madam Gao's natal village of Gaojia to marry elder brother. Elder sister, acknowledged by all who met her to be quiet and pretty, was to marry out to a family better than ours that lived in faraway Gatan village. We were sad that eventually we would not see her as often as we would like, but we would have her company for another 6 years before the actual marriage, then another 2 or 3 years after that before she left us for good. In our county, we follow the custom of bulo fujia, not falling permanently into our husbands' homes until we become pregnant. That year, on the 8th day of the 4th lunar month, elder sister's sworn sisters met at our house for bullfighting day. The day after that, Madam Wang came upstairs to visit our women's chambers, and once the tea was poured, she got down to business.
"Cherished mother, we have discussed before some of the possibilities open to your daughter. A marriage to a good family in Tongku village seems assured, but as you may recall from the first day we met, I saw in Lily the chance for her to become a Lao Tong. Tongku village is 45 minutes away by men's walking. Most families there are from the Lu clan. There is a potential Lao Tong match for Lily in this clan. The girl's name is Snowflower."
Mama's first question showed me and everyone else in the room not only that she had not forgotten what Madam Wang had suggested, but that she had been thinking about this possibility ever since.
"What of the 8 characters? I see no reason for a match unless the 8 characters are in full agreement."
"Mother, I would not have come to you today unless the 8 characters aligned well. Lily and Snowflower were born in the year of the horse, in the same month, and if what both mothers have told me is true, on the same day and in the same hour as well. Lily and Snowflower have the same number of brothers and sisters, and they are each the 3rd child. But..."
Madam Wang held up a hand to stop my mother from continuing.
"To answer your question before you ask it, yes,
the third daughter in the Liu family is also with her ancestors. Lily and Snowflower are of identical height, of equal beauty, and most important, their feet were bound on the same day. Snowflower's great-grandfather was a Jin Shi scholar, so social and economic standing are not matched.
Madam Wong did not have to explain that if this family had an imperial scholar of the highest grade among its ancestors, it must indeed be well-connected and well-off.
Snowflower's mother does not seem to mind these discrepancies, since the two girls share so many other sames.
Mama nodded calmly, but I wanted to fly from my chair and scream my excitement. The matchmaker reached into her sleeve, pulled out a fan, and called me over. As she handed it to me, Madam Wong spoke over my head to my mother.
You'll need time to consider your daughter's fate.
I clicked open the fan and stared at the words that ran down one of the folds and at the garland of leaves that adorned the upper edge. Mama spoke sternly to the matchmaker.
You give this to my daughter, though you and I have not discussed your fee?
Madam Wong waved away the suggestion.
Same as with her marriage. No fee to the Yi family. The other girl's family can pay me. And if I raise your daughter's value now as a Lao Tong, my bride price payment from the groom's family will be further enriched. I am satisfied with this arrangement.
She rose and took a few steps towards the stairs. Then she turned, rested a hand on Aunt's shoulder, and announced to the room,
One more thing you should all consider. This woman has done a good job with her daughter, and I can see that Beautiful Moon and Lily are close. If we can agree to this Lao Tang relationship for Lily, which will help solidify her chance of marriage into Tong Ku, then I think it would be a good thing to consider looking for a match for Beautiful Moon there as well.
This possibility took us all by surprise. I forgot about decorum and turned to Beautiful Moon, who looked as excited as I felt. While Mama and Aunt walked the matchmaker to her palanquin, elder sister tipped her head toward the fan I still held.
What does it say? I can't read all the words.
Knowing only she could help me, Aunt was the first one back upstairs. Using her finger, she pointed to each character. I memorized the words on the spot. I understand there is a girl of good character and women's learning in your home. You and I are of the same year and the same day. Could we not be sames together? Before I could respond to this girl named Snowflower, many things had to be examined and weighed by my family. We spent hours in the upstairs chamber listening as Mama and Aunt discussed the possible consequences of a Lao Tong match.
A Lao Tong match is as significant as a good marriage, Aunt might say to begin the conversation. A Lao Tong relationship is made by choice for the purpose of emotional companionship and eternal fidelity. A marriage is not made by choice and has only one purpose, to have sons.
Hearing these words about sons, Mama would try to comfort her sister-in-law. You have Beautiful Moon. She is a good girl and makes everyone happy. And she will leave me forever when she marries out. Your two sons will live with you for the rest of your life. Aunt paused as she always did at this point. This Lao Tong relationship will give Lily added value and show people in Tong Ku that she is worthy of a good marriage into their village. Variations of this conversation were endless, and I listened to them every day. What I didn't get to hear was how all this was translated to my father during Mama and Baba's bedtime. This match would cost my father resources. The constant exchange of gifts between the old sames, the sharing of food during Snowflower's visits to our house, and the expense for me to travel to Tong Ku, all of which he did not have. But as Madam Wong said, it was up to Mama to convince Baba that this was a good idea. Aunt helped, too, by whispering in Uncle's ear, since Beautiful Moon's future was attached to mine. Anyone who says that women do not have influence in men's decisions makes a vast and stupid mistake. Eventually, my family made the choice I wished for. The next question was how I should respond to this Snowflower. Mama helped me add extra embroidery to a pair of shoes I had been working on to send as my first gift,
but she could not begin to advise me on my written response. Usually the return message was sent on a new fan. I had something different in mind, which broke completely with tradition. When I looked at Snowflower's interwoven garland at the top of the fan, I thought of the old saying, "Hyacinth bean and papayas. Long vines, deep roots. Palm trees inside the garden walls, with deep roots, stand 1,000 years. To me, this summed up what I wanted our relationship to be. Deep, entwined, forever. I wanted this one fan to be the symbol of our relationship. I was only 7.5 years old, but I envisioned what this fan with all its secret messages would become. I asked Aunt to help me compose the right new shoe reply. If I was to be radical with my return gift, I should be as conventional as possible with my secret message. Aunt wrote out the words we agreed upon, and I practiced them until my calligraphy was passable. When I was satisfied, I ground ink on the inkstone, mixing it with water until I achieved a deep black. I took brush in hand and dipped it in the ink. I began by painting a tiny snowflower amid the garland of leaves at the top of the fan. For my message, I chose the fold next to Snowflower's beautiful calligraphy. I started with a traditional opening and then proceeded with the accepted phrases for such an occasion. I write to you. Please listen to me. Though I am poor and am not worthy of your family's high gate, I write today to say it was fated that we join. We are a pair of mandarin ducks. We are a bridge over the river. People everywhere will envy our good match. Yes, my heart is true to go with you. I set the fan and the pair of bound foot shoes I had made on a piece of cloth. When Madam Wong first saw what I had done to the fan, she pursed her lips in disapproval. Then, after a long moment, she nodded knowingly.
This is truly a perfect match. These two girls are not just sames in the 8 characters. They are alike in their horse spirits as well. This will be interesting. The next step is to complete the official arrangements. I suggest that I escort the two girls to the temple of Gupo Fair in Shexia to write their contract. Mother, I will take care of transportation for both girls. Little walking will be required.
With that, Madam Wong took the 4 ends of the cloth, folded them over the fan and shoes, and took them away with her to give to my future Lao Tong. Over the next few days, it was hard for me to sit still when all I could think about was that I would soon meet Snowflower. When Madam Wong's palanquin arrived, Mama carried me downstairs and outside. Madam Wong held the door to the palanquin open. Mama set me down, and I stepped into the small space. Snowflower was far prettier than I had imagined. Her eyes were perfect almonds. Her skin was pale. She wore a sky-blue silk tunic embroidered with a cloud pattern. Peeking out from beneath her trousers were the shoes I had made her. She smiled, and I smiled back. The palanquin had just 1 seat, so the 3 of us had to squeeze together. To keep the palanquin balanced, Madam Wong sat in the middle. The bearers picked us up, and soon they were trotting over the bridge that led out of Puhui. I had never been in a palanquin before. With the curtains drawn, the heat of the day, and the strange rhythmic movement, my stomach felt sick. I had heard about the Temple of Gupo Fair. Who hadn't? Women went there each year on the 10th day of the 5th month to pray for the birth of sons. It was said that thousands of people went to this fair. When I began to hear other noises coming through the curtain, bells jingling on horse-drawn carts and the calls of street vendors, I knew we had reached our destination. The palanquin came to a stop, and the bearers set us down with a hard thump. Madam Wong leaned over me, pushed open the door, told us to stay put, and got out. I closed my eyes, concentrating on calming my stomach when a voice spoke my thoughts. I am so happy we're still again. I felt like I was going to be sick,
What would you have thought of me then?
I opened my eyes and looked at Snowflower. She smiled, patted the cushion next to her, and said, "Let's see what's happening outside." I scooted to her side of the palanquin. She pulled back the curtain. My eyes filled with amazing images. Yao nationality people had set up fabric stands decorated with billowing pieces of cloth. A troop of musicians in flamboyant costumes passed by. Many women walked on the street, sworn sisters who'd married out to new villages and had reunited on this special day. Together they swayed down the street on their golden lilies. There were so many beautiful sights to absorb, all of which were heightened by an incredibly sweet smell that wafted into the palanquin, enticing my nose and calming my stomach. "Have you been here before?" Snowflower asked. When I shook my head no, she rattled on, "I've come with my mother several times. I hope we can go to the taro stand. Mama always takes me there. Do you smell it?" "Old Man Zhou, he owns the stand, makes the best treat in the county. He fries cubes of taro until they are soft on the inside, but firm and crisp on the outside. Then he melts sugar in a big wok." "Have you had sugar, Lily?" "It is the best thing in the world. He melts it until it turns brown. Then he throws the fried taro into the sugar and swirls it around until it is coated. He drops this on a plate and places it on your table along with a bowl of cold water. You can't believe how hot the taro is with that melted sugar. It would burn a hole in your mouth if you tried to eat it like that. So you pick up a piece with your chopsticks and dip it in the water. Crack, crack, crack. That's the sound it makes as the sugar goes hard. When you bite into it, you get the crunch of the sugar shell, the crispiness of the fried taro, and then the final soft center. Auntie just has to take us. Don't you agree?"
"Auntie? You talk. I thought maybe all you could do was write beautiful words."
"Maybe I don't talk as much as you," I responded quietly, my feelings hurt. She was the great-granddaughter of an imperial scholar and far more knowledgeable than the daughter of a common farmer. She picked up my hand. "Don't worry. I don't care if you're quiet. My talking always gets me in trouble because I often don't think before I speak, while you will be an ideal wife, always choosing your words with great care." You see, right there on that first day, we understood each other. But did that stop us from making mistakes in the future? Madam Wong opened the door to the palanquin.
"Come along, girls. Everything is arranged. 10 steps will get you to your destination. More than that, and I would break my promise to your mothers."
We stood not far from a paper goods stand decorated with red streamers, good luck couplets, and painted images of the goddess Gupo. A table in front was piled with the most colorful items for sale. Aisles on either end allowed patrons to enter the stand, which was protected from the hubbub of the street by 3 long tables on the sides. In the middle of the stand, a small table was set with ink, brushes, and 2 straight-back chairs. Madam Wong told us to select a piece of paper for our contract. Snowflower asked me, "Which do you like?" Snowflower had the knowledge to select the paper, the most appropriate for the importance of the occasion. In wordless agreement, we handed the paper to the merchant. Madam Wong paid for it and for us to write our contract at the center table. Snowflower and I sat down opposite each other.
"How many girls do you think have sat in these chairs to write their contracts?" Snowflower asked. "We must write the best contract ever. What do you think it should say?"
I was unsure of myself, while she seemed to know so much. She'd been here before, and I'd never been anywhere. Every suggestion I made came out like a question. "We're to be Lao Tong for life? We will always be true? We will do chores together in the upstairs chamber?"
Snowflower picked up a brush and dipped it in ink. As she began to write, I saw she had taken my suggestions. My sentiments and her beautiful phrasing swirled together, taking 2 girls and creating 1 common thought. I remember so many of the words. How could I not? They became the words of my heart.
"We, Miss Snowflower of Tongku Village, and Miss Lily of Puwei Village will be true to each other. We will comfort each other with kind words. We will ease each other's hearts. We will whisper and embroider together in the women's chamber. We will practice the three obediences and the four virtues. We will follow Confucian instruction as found in the women's classic. On this day, we swear a bond. For 10,000 years, we will be like two flowers in the same garden. Never a step apart, never a harsh word between us. We will be old.